From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now, or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Oh, hi. I can't say that I didn't know you were going to be here. After all, we are experimenting in the studio right now with psychic powers.
Not psychedelics.
No. That's an entirely different actual study that you can partake in with psychedelics and the mind. But this one, we just wanted to see who was going to show up and listen to this episode. So, thanks for being here. We knew you'd be here.
Whoever you are. My name is Ben.
And I'm Matt.
And we're here with our super producer, Noel, our mascot, who is a skeleton named after Agent Scully in the X-Files, which makes this, ladies and gentlemen, stuff they don't want you to know. But hey, even if you were psychic, you might have already known that.
Yeah, that's true. You already know all the things we're about to say.
Mm-hmm. Which has got to be a real hassle when you're doing small talk at dinner parties and stuff.
Ugh.
You know, you can see the night stretching before you. If that is indeed the way that psychic powers work. So let's open up today's podcast with a story about a scientist named Emanuel Swedenborg. Or would that be Swedenborg?
You know, I'm not sure, Ben.
Well, Swedish listeners can correct us and let us know if it is Swedenborg or Swedenborg. But point being, this guy, tremendously influential scientist, philosopher, and also a theologian and mystic, he believed that he had clairvoyant abilities, and so did many of his friends. He was born in 1688. So at the age of 63, he began to experience these dreams and these visions, culminating in what became for him a religious experience, an epiphany. But you can hear various different stories about Swedenborg's predilections here. One of my favorites is something I read as a child in a series of Time Life books that maybe only three or four of you guys listening will remember. That is Mysteries of the Unknown.
Nice.
You remember these?
It sounds so familiar, though I don't know that I can pinpoint a single story or issue.
Well, you and I were working together a while back. Gosh, this must be maybe 3 or 4 years ago now. And I caught a wild hair. I went back on eBay after watching a commercial from, you know, the late 80s, early 90s about these books on YouTube. I ordered all of them. I hunted every single book down, and I had the complete set, and it was a childhood dream come true. And in one of those books, all of these books have titles that will drive the more skeptical members of our audience wild with rage. Things like Mystic Places, Psychic Power, Psychic Phenomena, and many of these seem related and they overlap, but whatever. I love these things, Matt. And one of the stories I read in a book called Psychic Powers had this party. It was like a dinner party in some town in Sweden, and one of the guests there all of a sudden got up, walked out, was increasingly distressed, walked back in the room, and said that a fire was consuming his neighbor's house and that it was going to consume his own house as well, and he knew it with certitude. The people in the, you know, in the room with them, of course, reacted a bit skeptically because at this time, there was no way this man, Emanuel Swedenborg, could know that a fire was consuming his house.
And they were far away from his place of residence. Okay.
Allegedly, it was true. So what Swedenborg claimed to have experienced here and in other instances was clairvoyance, which is a, I don't know, kind of inner sight, I guess.
Yeah, sure. We could just say clairvoyance is anytime you're aware of something that happens far away, either in a time frame or in spatial difference. Allegedly, you know, it's one of those things that are called psychic powers, which, like you said, makes the lights go off in a skeptically minded person. Because, well, there haven't really been any psychic powers proven as of yet.
Right. Now, you already know what a psychic power is if you're listening to this show. It's an umbrella term for several different kinds of alleged abilities. So he said one would be clairvoyance. What's another one, Matt?
Well, telekinesis, moving, sure. Being able to move something physical with your brain somehow.
Then there would be telepathy, being able to hear people's thoughts.
I forget what they call it, but it's a form of pyrotechnics where you can create fire.
Oh, pyrokinesis.
Pyrokinesis, thank you.
Then there would be, what's the one where you're able to, psychometry, where you would be able to touch something, right? And learn things about it.
Absorb it, yeah.
Absorb the memories surrounding it and stuff.
I like to think a lot of these as being able to, if it were one day to be proven scientifically somehow, mm-hmm. that there is some kind of quick leap into a fourth or fifth dimensional understanding that, if a third dimensional being could mm-hmm. just understand it momentarily or something, some kind of slip in that reality, I guess.
Or in that constraint on perception. Mm-hmm. So maybe something like climbing a little bit higher into the fourth dimension just for a second to see the flat circle that is time or something like that.
Sure, yeah. That's the only way in my head that I could imagine it ever becoming an actual thing that was proven.
Yeah, and there's some interesting things we'll get into here as well about the nature of perception itself. But maybe it's better to call this stuff non-linear perception because it's still experienced through the framework of other human senses, right? Like what happens when you have a vision?
Yeah, it's almost a dreamlike experience from what I've read.
Right, yeah, and everybody's had a dream before, so you encounter these senses or these experiences through the same sensory inputs that you inarguably possess today. If you are Swedenborg, you hear the fire, you see it burning, you feel the temperature, you hear the screams, and so on. It's just not in a way that most scientists would argue is based in your perception of the facts, right?
Yeah, and that's why mainstream science considers these kinds of psychic powers or purported powers and even research into these powers as just kind of bunk, and they're dismissed, unfortunately. Or fortunately, depending on how you think about it. But there are a lot of things that are, let's say, attributed to. One would be a misattributed cause. So having some kind of seizure or something with your brain, a neurological issue that causes you to experience something differently than how you imagine it. Or you imagine it differently than how it actually is.
Sure. There's also the idea of misattributing psychic power to a mundane cause such as, you know, maybe you had earlier heard some information, but mm-hmm. you forgot you heard it, but you retained the information. So it sounds like you're reading someone's mind, but the only mind you're reading really is your own. And, you know, that's similar to the idea about UFOs being weather balloons, right?
Or for some reason you get a small concussion and become unconscious for a few moments. And in that time frame where you're unconscious, which could only be a few seconds.
Sure.
You know, your brain is firing so rapidly. It's happened to me before where I was unconscious just for a moment, but I felt like I had dreamed for a night or days even.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that I saw and heard felt real to me. But in reality, it was just a moment where my brain kind of rebooted.
And then there's also sloppy science, right?
Sure, you can look at in experimentations if there were poor controls over certain things, or maybe there was a confirmation bias in one of the researchers that wanted to prove that it's true. You could even look at flawed methodology. There are all kinds of things that could go wrong inside an experimental setting.
Right, with the best of intentions. And this brings us to the idea of the third pillar that mainstream science typically uses to dismiss psychic powers, which might be one of the more fun ones for a lot of people, the idea of active deception.
Oh, yeah, you've got to love the swindlers and the charlatans. I always think of, in particular, and nothing against the guy, but Uri Geller and some of the parlor trick mental gymnastics that he would do on stage for people. And
Like, you know, what?
The whole bending of the spoon thing. There were a couple instances where he could, you know, tell you about your dead loved one mm-hmm. or something. And, you know, the using cold reading and other techniques like this, we've seen that it's just something that anyone can do if you learn the techniques.
Yeah, so cold reading would be noticing the minute reactions, typically unconscious, that people have when you're speaking to them, which is why sometimes when you'll see self-professed mediums like the Long Island Medium, or what was that guy's name, John Edwards?
Yeah.
Who claimed to speak with the dead. Yeah, he had a show for a little while. You'll see them guess with some pretty open-ended things and intently studying the other person. But despite the dismissal of the mainstream scientific world vis-a-vis psychic powers, mainstream America take psychic powers as a foregranted fact of life. And we've got a great statistic for you here.
Yes, 60% of them at least believe that it's true. They believe at least one type of psychic power is real.
Mm-hmm. And this sort of stuff drives the really zealous, self-righteous types of skeptics crazy. And Matt, they can't seem to understand that no matter how rude or loud or bullish they are to people, those people still don't seem inclined to agree with them.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough stance to be hardlined either way, 100%, right?
I mean, yeah, I'm playing a little bit because I know this is a touchy subject for people. But the truth of the matter is that if you are rude or smug or, you know, condescending to people, then you have to ask yourself if you're really trying to persuade them, to change their opinion or evolve it. Because often, and listeners, skeptics, true believers like, you guys know that Matt and I spend a lot of time on the internet reading forums from people who say things that I will just go out and say are bonkers.
Yeah.
And then people who, say things that are, you know, that are clearly plausible, right?
Mm-hmm.
And on both sides of that spectrum that we're talking about, one thing that crops up is that people often have a bizarrely contentious emotional stake in it. And regardless of whether you consider yourself a skeptic or someone who has unlocked the hidden mysteries of the psychic mind, we can tell you that the way to persuade people is to have a conversation with them. No one wins an argument on the internet. We know that.
No, not
right?
possible.
And we also know that the implication is only that something happened to them in their childhood and they're mad about it and they want it to be your fault.
And with that in mind, Ben, we have to say this, we're not going to sugarcoat it.
Sure.
Seriously, there has been no comprehensively accepted scientific validation of any kind of these psychic powers, or let's call them, like you said, nonlinear perceptions.
Yes, there have been approximately, well, by which we mean exactly, zero. And what do we mean, though? You see, you hear all those qualifying terms. Comprehensively accepted or mm-hmm. universally accepted validation of this.
Well, scientific validation.
Scientific validation. So something that we could quantify, that could be empirical. For such a test to be accepted, it would have to conform to some very rigorous methodology. And, you know, a point that becomes sticky sometimes is this idea that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, which I'm on board with. It's also something that you hear often when someone is making a controversial claim, because this is such a third rail in scientific fields that often just asking the question would be dangerous for your career.
Yeah, that could invalidate anything else you wanted to study.
Yeah, which is to me a really sad and you know, it says a lot of things about the state of current society, and not many of them are good.
Yeah, it means the boundaries of a lot of these things mm-hmm. won't get pushed.
Mm-hmm. But it is, I do, however, with that being said, I do agree with the idea that if there is something that is extraordinary or up to this point unproven, then yeah, get the paperwork right, get the
yeah.
evidence, compile the data. And another thing, speaking of this paperwork and compiling data, this I think is maybe the most important point for any test of psychic powers to be universally accepted, to be something that people at MIT and Harvard and people, well, most people aren't reading MIT and Harvard press releases. For something that Jon Stewart would talk about on The Daily Show, for it to gain some kind of credibility, it would need to be reproducible. And what do we mean when we say that?
Well, you'd have to be able to have an independent group of people take your methodology, your study, and reproduce it to the T in a completely separate setting with different people. Maybe they'd use the same variables and everything, but you'd have to be able to get the exact same result.
Like, that's a very, very reasonable thing to ask. And I think it's crucial. And unfortunately, it has not, to our knowledge, from everything we could find, it has not happened yet. And we have talked about psychic powers of various types, right?
Yeah, we looked at psychotronics and the USSR's attempts to figure out what the heck's going on, if there's anything going on, and then Project Stargate in the U.S. trying to make psychic soldiers with all various different types of psychic abilities.
Right, and this has all been, skullduggery so far. So to be fair, there's a lot of stuff there that's still classified. But today, we're going to be talking about a very specific type of alleged psychic power. It is called clairvoyance. So, Matt, what is that, really?
Well, it's several things. One of them is precognition. That's the ability to see into the future, to tell when something's going to happen and to whom. Then you've got retrocognition, which is the ability to look into the past and see something that maybe nobody else would have been able to see, something, a private moment, let's say.
So an example of that would be somebody is walking through a field in, I don't know, pick a country.
Yugoslavia.
Somebody's walking through a field in Yugoslavia, and all of the sudden they are struck with this vision of a peasant running out of the woods into the field, and let's say it's the same field, and then digging a hole and putting a sack of coins in there, and they walk a little further, they see the field, and they walk right to where the coins are and they dig them up. That would be retrocognition.
Absolutely. I've heard it used a lot of times when someone experiences the death of someone who perhaps died a violent death, and they were able to relive that moment to find out who the killer was.
I mean, that sounds like a horrible power, but it does crop up in fiction, yeah.
Fiction, it happens all the time. Then the third one is remote viewing, and this is one that U.S. and the Soviet Union both looked into pretty heavily, and that's the ability to imagine a place that someone, let's say your higher up, wants you to imagine where some hostages are being held, and you don't know where that place is. Nobody knows where that place is on your team, but you can write, just by writing little sketches down on a piece of paper, you visualize the thing, and somehow or another you are able to almost astrally project yourself to where that place is, draw a picture of it, and then you can help your team find the guys.
And you know, there's a lot to be said about that, which we'll say a little bit later, because I want to interrupt the flow here. But just think of Men Who Stare at Goats, that film.
Yeah, and watch it if you haven't. It's pretty fun.
There's one more.
Yes, the final one is the ability to communicate with the dead, whatever that means.
Right, yeah. What does that mean exactly?
I mean, come on, we just talked about it earlier. Yeah. Who's the Long Island medium? The Long Island medium,
Long Island,
all these people
medium,
who can just tell you what your grandfather is thinking right now.
Yeah, and that offends quite a few people when they see a medium as some sort of snake oil salesman, right? And believe that they're exploiting the folks that they're claiming to help.
Yeah, anytime there's money exchanged for that kind of service, a frowny face is what I would say.
To me, this is the one that I am the absolute most skeptical about ever happening. And I'll say why a little bit later. But we should go ahead and differentiate between one other thing. Many people confuse clairvoyance, the alleged experience of clairvoyance, with the very real experience of déjà vu.
Oh, yeah. Déjà vu is a real thing. Let's say the things that happen in our lives tend to repeat themselves, at least in small variations, right? Walking by a storefront and seeing a thing, a cat maybe.
Sure.
Or walking by and seeing someone in a certain place because that person frequents that place very often.
Yeah, there's always the woman in the blue dress with the yellow summer hat.
Sure.
Whatever.
You know, and it's one of those things that's tough to throw away as, hey, this is just completely bunk, because a lot of people experience deja vu. I'm pretty certain that you have experienced deja vu, listener.
Yes, and perhaps maybe experiencing it at this very moment. But what is time? Time, time, time. There's another thing that many, many people have had experiences with, and it's the following. So, Matt, let's say you have a dream. Tell me about this dream.
Well, in this dream, I am jogging on a treadmill.
Mm-hmm.
And I am standing on, the treadmill's on top of a building in a city that I don't know exactly where it is, but I'm very familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
And down on the street, I see all of these cars going extremely fast on this highway. And there are no other cars. It's this one group of cars, and they're all going the same direction down this highway.
Mm-hmm. Traveling in like a pod or pack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, they just stop. They just stop. And there's a light at the very front of all the cars.
Mm-hmm. Like a flash, like a traffic light, or?
It's not a traffic light. It's almost this glowing blue light that uh-huh. happens, and my treadmill like stops working.
So, let's say you have that dream, and you remember specifically the moment where you look down, you see the pod of cars moving, the bright light, the blue glow, rather. And then your treadmill stops working and you don't think about it, but this image stays with you, mm-hmm. right? And later, I guess later in the sense of linear time, right?
Sure.
If this stuff is true, then a week, 2 weeks, a year, 20 years, you're on a treadmill. You're in a tall building and you look down and you see, oh, that's weird. Just a couple of cars, and then part of you goes, wait a second.
Yeah, you can almost feel it
like
happening.
It's the very tip of your tongue sensation mm-hmm. where you're about to just name the future before it occurs for you.
And even if it doesn't come all the way to fruition, like the blue mm-hmm. light doesn't happen, the treadmill stops or anything, still that feeling of familiarity.
Yes.
Is what you would consider deja vu.
Yeah. And I don't want to invalidate anybody's experiences here, even if I will say that if you believe that you have the power to communicate on a routine, consistent basis with the dead, then you should contact people among the living who could help you learn more about this ability, because you could be the first person proven to do this.
Yeah, it would mean probably a lot of lab time.
Sure.
But yeah. It would be for the greater good of everyone.
So we talked about these studies, right? These studies of clairvoyance. So let's talk a little bit more in depth. So we talked about this idea of clairvoyance and these studies of psychic powers. And mm-hmm. you and I have actually done quite a few videos on these. So just to recap, there's a guy named Dean Radin, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks that parapsychology, which is also a name for psi researchers, which is also a name for, people who are researching psychic powers, which is also a name to their opponents for pseudoscience.
Sure.
Radin believes that parapsychology is just as repeatable as any science, but it's also subtle and complex. And it's subtle and complex because we have an incomplete understanding of it, which can make a lot of sense logically, because to me it's possible that there could be some things that we have so little information on that we don't really have a way to observe or effectively test it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's possible.
We have to leave it open that it's possible, right? I mean, I think that's one of the rules of this planet, is that you have to leave room that anything is possible.
Something about our Georgia Guidestones episodes and Noel's documentary whenever somebody says, leave room for, I always think they're going to say, leave room for nature.
Yeah.
Leave room for nature.
Well, then, in nature, as we've seen with nature, sometimes it's fairly randomized, right?
Yeah. Or at least appears so, right?
Yes. It appears random. And this is all because of our so far limited understanding of a lot of the minute processes that speed nature and time along. We're getting there. We're getting closer to a lot of these answers, but we've still got a long way to go.
Like in our video that came out earlier this week, I think it was the three things about your brain that no one understands.
Mm-hmm.
We found that despite living in the 21st century as we record this, some of the smartest neurobiologists in the world are still trying to figure out some of the basic cognitive things that happen to you every single day, unless you're a robot listening to this now.
Yeah, every memory that you create, how does it physically become a memory?
Every decision you make, what makes it for you?
Yeah, and does it happen like a second before you choose to do something? Where does your consciousness come into free will? That was one of the most fascinating things that you talked about. Readiness potential. That's fascinating.
Yeah, Noel, if we could have a little bit of trippy music here. So, regardless of where you're sitting now or walking, you might be working out, you might be making something to eat, you might be in your car or on the train, take a second and try to feel where you end and where the world begins. So you can feel your clothes, right? If you're wearing clothes, you can feel your clothes because those are one of the closest things to your body. But then where does your body end and where do you begin? Is there a division? All those neurochemicals and synapses firing in your brain, what part of them is you? How much of that stops before you stop? Because we know a person can live without legs. We know a person can live without arms. We know that people can live without large parts of their brain. So what are you that's actually listening to this podcast? And without understanding what the nature of consciousness actually is, it's damnably difficult to try to understand what consciousness also does, right?
Oh, that's, yeah, man. Oh, God. This is the kind of thing that keeps me up at night. Well, a lot of these things that we talk about keep me up at night, this one in particular, because just trying to nail down what I, the thing I, big I is.
Yeah, is it sort of just an extension of a Jungian archetype, with the super consciousness really being one, what was the Bill Hicks quote, with just one super entity continually experiencing itself kind of deal?
Yeah, the universe experiencing itself just over and over and over again.
Right. And you know, how would we even begin to measure or prove that, right?
Yeah, sure.
So with the Radin guy, with Dean Radin, one thing that he was associated with, I believe, was Pear, right? These are the guys that you and I did a video on earlier who found, or argued they found, what was it?
It was a connection between probability and a conscious observer. And whether or not I think the experiment was they had ball bearings dropping down into, were they the little buckets?
Yeah.
And they had people sit there and consciously want the ball bearings to fall in certain buckets or a certain order. And they said that they got a measured difference in when someone was consciously trying to make it happen.
Yeah, a measurable effect, not a large one, mind you.
And they're not touching or manipulating the thing at all, the ball bearings or the boxes.
They're behind glass, so they can be blown on or something like that. But This stuff, although Radin and the team sort of went to quantum mechanics as some sort of explanation, they looked at non-locality, backwards causality, and stuff like that. They've been heavily criticized by physicists and psychologists and especially physicists who study quantum mechanics, because you know that those physicists have to be so tired of quantum mechanics being whipped out as just the quote-unquote scientific explanation behind everything.
It's a fun word, and it's a ridiculously complex subject, mm-hmm. and yeah, I can imagine it would be quite annoying if someone is just applying your field that is so complex to this thing that seems probably pretty mundane and has nothing to do with it.
And we know one of the other big studies that you briefly mentioned was Project Stargate. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was the idea that the conclusion that we came to when we discussed this earlier was that during the Cold War, both sides thought that the other one was, you know, making some kind of gains in whatever this psychic soldier thing was.
Yeah.
And in order to stay ahead of the game, you know, ahead of your enemy at least, both sides had to put money into this. And they were studying all kinds of things, like we said, telekinesis, remote viewing,
right.
Just astral projection, all that kind of stuff. Being able to spy, make a super spy, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't go so well. At least if you read some of the reports, but we can't get all the information, as you said earlier. Some of it's still classified.
We ran into something interesting here because for a time, people in charge of the program believed it was working. And then, you know, you have to ask yourself, do they believe it's working because it's a solid paycheck? You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Or are they getting measurable data? This idea of traveling via the mind and using a sketch to depict what you have found is tricky because there's a little bit of subjectivity or interpretation there where someone could look at a triangle and say, you know, oh, he went to the pyramids, or, oh, he went to the top, the very tip top of the Washington Monument, right? It's difficult, but we do know that there was a lot of money poured into it, and for a time at least, people seemed happy with the results. Facets of the United States government. The most successful of those people was a guy named Ingo Swann. We also know that Sony researched this as well, which, when did we talked about that with Pear, or was that a different video?
They kind of jumbled together, but the Sony one, I think, was a completely different video.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're looking at ESP.
Yes. Yeah.
But that still is weird to me because
they used children
yeah.
in the testing.
But it all seems to be, it seemed to me, like, I think the big question that we asked was, why the heck would Sony get into that? Right at the time they were making electronics. I mean, they still largely make electronics
sure.
and movies that enrage the DPRK. But you know, why? Why the heck would Sony get into that? And it made me just think about their CDs. Do you remember the ESP technology on CDs? The idea that the machine would read far enough into the CD that if it physically
mm-hmm,
skipped,
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't miss a beat because it already knows what's going to happen.
Dude, 10 seconds ahead of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought when I initially heard about that subject that maybe it was just some kind of miscommunication, that they were actually just studying the ESP for that.
Some mistranslation, because those acronyms stand for very different things.
Yeah, and it turns out, no, they really did.
Yes, they really did. And when they stopped this program, which went on for a while,
mm-hmm.
when they finally stopped this program, I want you to picture something like, I don't know, it's the beginning of one of the Ghostbusters movies where Dr. Venkman is holding up those cards and the person has to guess what's on the card. It was kind of similar to that. And ultimately, Sony's reason for folding the program was just bizarre and fascinating to me. They Shyamalan'd me, you guys, because mm-hmm. they didn't stop the program because it was unsuccessful or had middling results. Indeed, in the memos where they talk about the cancellation of the program, they say they found something that works and that is at least worth researching more if they were academics, but they're not. They're a business.
So weird.
And they said, we can't figure out how to make money off this. therefore we're not going to do it anymore.
I feel like they just got a big budget surplus for a year, and they just went, you know what, let's prove psychic powers.
I don't know, but you're like a little more skeptical with this stuff than I am, for sure.
Oh, yeah, sure. I don't know. I live too long, Ben.
You live too long, Matt.
As a younger person. Sorry.
There's another study that was pretty interesting that came out from a Cornell professor named Daryl Bim, which we mention in one of this week's episodes. And Professor Bim, I almost said instigated, he created a very fascinating study where he would do the following. Check this out. So he would give these student volunteers a list of words, and these could just be like random words. They don't have to be fancy. So they could be like brim, exit, gazebo, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then he would give them this list of words, and he would give them a few minutes to read it. And then what he didn't tell them is that he was giving them a surprise quiz at the end after they've read these words, where they would be given the surprise quiz to test their memory of the words, what the words are, etc. But here's where it gets crazy, because you remember this, I think we talked about this, the third step of the test was that after they had taken the quiz, the computer program randomly selected a few of the words, not all, but a few of the words for additional study, and it had the students retype this word. So you would maybe out of brim, exit, and gazebo, you would need to type exit like three times or several times, right?
But this would be a much longer
list.
It's
a much longer list than just three. Yeah. And this weird thing happened in the data when he looked at it and the way he compiled it. He said, wow, these students are doing better on the test based on the words that they, you know, studied or rehearsed after the test.
The randomly selected words.
The randomly selected ones, yes. So the students didn't know there was going to be a test. They didn't know they would have to study after the test. And somehow their performance, perhaps, possibly by coincidence, went up, possibly by, you know, again, sloppy science, which is the running accusation. That happened, the paper was first seen in the news in 2010, published in a fairly prestigious journal in 2011, and since that point, people have been arguing about if this is true. And multiple studies come out, again, saying that there is no such thing as psychic powers, but we think that for those of you who believe in these sorts of cognitive abilities, that keeping up with folks like Daryl Bim is going to be it'd be interesting, perhaps even instrumental to your argument in the future.
Awesome, Ben. I think this is the time where I'm going to do the thing that you usually do to me.
I've been talking the whole time.
I know, but that's too bad. This is the part where I say, Ben, is there a psychic power, maybe all of them, or just one that you really believe in? One that you think we just don't have the grasp on yet?
You know, I've quarreled with that question because this is a little bit of biography, but in my family, I'm not going to say which side or which relatives or whom, in my family, there's been this long tradition going back a weirdly long amount of time of people in my family being accused, not by people in our family, but outside the family, of being some sort of, you know, witch person or things like that.
Warlocks.
Sure. And I think a lot of that goes back to the Melungeon thing. Honestly, it's just some sort of othering. But I have a hard time saying that there is a silver bullet, everybody has or anyone can do it kind of power, because what we know about the human body, every other thing the human body can do, is that most people can do the same things, but only to varying degrees, right? In the detail, we find the heroes and the villains, right? The degree of their ability, which is why some people are Olympic runners and other people heave when they get upstairs. So if there were some sort of psychic power, then logically it follows that this ability would have to be present in some way in the majority of the human population. Right? That makes sense.
Okay.
I'm building up to the answer.
I got you. Okay.
So the next, I gave you my bias, which is pretty anti this stuff mm-hmm. growing up just because of my personal life. But I'll also say that given how little we know about both the nature of reality and the nature of perception in the human brain, it is completely possible that we understand the skin of perception or the surface of it, but we don't know the machinery behind it. Now, of course, I know that some people could say, well, you're just dwelling on a few uncertainties and making them bigger than they are, but we're not, because there are just these massive, massive gaps in knowledge about cognition. And that's not even verging on the metaphysical stuff. Right. So is it possible then that there is something about our perception, which we do not understand, or is there some alleged potential or some possible thing? Then while I'm carefully hedging that, what I am saying is that yes, it is possible that given the lack of understanding we have about consciousness, that our cognitive abilities, that our ability to think, you know, who am I? What am I? That self-aware part of us may be able to do or see or encounter more stuff than we know. And I know that sounds kind of hippy dippy, but I'm not saying that there are any psychic powers I believe in. What I'm saying is that it's just as credulous and naive to say that the possibility categorically does not exist. Saying something hasn't been proven and saying it will never be proven or does not exist, those are two very, very different things that people, sometimes with the best of intentions and sometimes conveniently, confuse.
Very nice, Ben.
What about you?
I'm going to submit to that answer. Just need to write down a few things. No, I have just a very simple observation, and I think, just like you said, with our holes in understanding and perception, and I think time, the way we understand time is a bit wonky still.
Mm-hmm.
Is it an actual thing? Does it really exist, or is it just something, a name that we have applied to a dimension?
And, not a bad idea.
And I think that perhaps the way that our brain functions and our neurons, because we've got so many questions there, mm-hmm. I think there may be some kind of link between a fourth dimensional understanding a fourth dimensional plane.
Sure.
And perhaps the way that our brain functions.
That, you know, that's a really interesting point.
But try and scientifically prove that, I dare you, because you probably won't be able to do it, at least not for a while.
Yeah, to prove something, we would need to have, again, an observable, reproducible, measurable effect, cause and effect, and a thing that we know always produces thing B.
But here's the thing. What if it just doesn't work that way?
Then that would mean that it's not real.
Right? But it's, I guess, my head goes to things like holographic universe theory, some of the more abstract ideas about the universe as a whole
mm-hmm.
and in general reality,
mm-hmm.
That would be the only reason that I would allow for this type of thing to be real, it was proven.
To me, it would be more like if it seemed that these things were not reproducible at all, but if just for argument's sake, we knew that something was real, it doesn't matter. We can take, I don't know, let's just make one up. Telepathy, right? Mm-hmm. We take telepathy for the sake of argument and say that somehow you, Noel, I, everybody listening knew that telepathy was real, but we couldn't reproduce it because it didn't work that way. Then what that would make me go back to would be the methodology of the science, because it seems like if something does not appear to be reproducible, then, and you know it is a real thing.
Then you find a way to reproduce that stuff.
I was going to say, you find out what other variable is in mm-hmm. there that's dirtying the test tube, because that's probably what's happening. And I think Dean Radin's argument about this sort of stuff being real but subtle and complex is an argument toward that perspective, that there are multiple variables that we have yet to find. With that being said, I have, like most people, been in some really weird situations. Just sounds like the beginning of a totally different story. But I always have gone to the idea of what I would call the boring stuff first. You know, maybe I somehow unconsciously knew that there was always a lady in a blue dress with a yellow hat somewhere, right? Maybe you saw a similar pack of cars stop on the interstate on TV 4 years ago. Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have to be honest that there are a lot of charlatans out there who want to prey on people who are emotionally vulnerable. So you have to be careful. But also, you and I have talked about this a long time. And I think, listeners, if you're still on board with us at this point in the game, you agree with us when we say that there are very few questions that are not worth asking.
Agree 100%. So let's put it to you. What do you think? Is there any truth to any of this stuff? Have you had an experience where, at least, that you can't explain scientifically of why you saw something? Oh,
one more thing, though. I'm sorry. I have to jump in and say this one more thing. The absolute craziest, craziest stuff that I read about. Okay. Matt, what if this ability to see through time and space and influence events in nonlinear perspectives, what if it's real? And what if someone doesn't want you to know? And what if these people, dare we call them Time Lords, what if these people are these entities are retroactively discrediting the ability of psychics around the world, which is this week's craziest thing been read on the internet. For the record, I don't believe it.
Okay.
But maybe I've been influenced by the future.
How would you know?
There's one thing that you can know for sure, though, and it's news about the show, about stuff they want you to know.
Yes, you have asked for it, and we finally got it. Guys and ladies, we have a store where you can buy t-shirts, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, customized t-shirts. They are awesome. There's a global mm-hmm. Illumination Global Unlimited shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And, yep. You know, if I am ever walking around on the street and I see somebody with one of those shirts on, I don't know. I'm probably just going to have to run up and hug them, because that is the coolest thing ever.
I'm not a hugger. I'll buy you a beer, though.
Oh, I'm going to give you a hug. Watch out.
Yeah, and we'll be adding more designs to this. We did a couple of these designs ourselves. We'll be adding more stuff, and we want to hear from you. We want to hear what you would like to see on a t-shirt, or if you want a hoodie, or what we should do. Because really, sky's the limit.
Yeah, and it helps support us. So, you know, if you do spend some money there, we really appreciate it. There are so many other ways you could spend your money.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give us some to support our show, we are just really grateful. So go to stuffthedontwantyoutoknow.spreadshirt.com. Check out our store. See if there's anything you like. Then, you can find us on Twitter or Facebook. We're at Conspiracy Stuff in both of those. You can send us a message that way, or you can always contact us through our email. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this topic and other unexplained phenomena, visit youtube.com/conspiracystuff. You can also get in touch on Twitter at the handle @conspiracystuff.